guys, welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. I'm your host, Alexa Curtis. And now that we've surpassed 70 episodes, I'm so excited. And I hope you guys loved last week's episode with Brittany Bennett. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that episode, I highly suggest it because Brittany had so many incredible ideas and even ideas for opportunities for how you guys can create and start your own brand. And also how to overcome a lot of obstacles that entrepreneurs face. So through my career, I've been really lucky to start speaking at different colleges and on different panels. I even started this summit that I hosted earlier this year called the Be Fearless Summit. And through that, I've met a lot of different people. I've met a lot of older entrepreneurs, a lot of younger entrepreneurs. And I actually met the founder of Next Gen Summit at a Fordham talk about over a few months ago. So I'm super excited to welcome Dylan Gambardella to This Is Life Unfiltered today. Dylan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on episode 71 now. Goodness, that is so exciting. I'm honestly a real joy to be with you today, and you've done some amazing stuff, Alexa, so appreciate you making time for this conversation.
Well, same to you, and I'm so excited to talk with you because obviously I have so many questions from the summit that I started, but more importantly, I'm really curious to know about your background. I know you went to Duke and you graduated in 2017, so take me back all the way to the beginning, starting from your childhood before you even started NextGen.
Oh, goodness. Now we're going way back. I love it. So I grew up in Westchester, New York, about an hour north of Manhattan. And I had a very much so the prototypical all-encompassing childhood experience. I played sports, did a little bit of high school science research. But I really loved the idea of building something. And I mentioned the science research aspect in high school. That was my quote unquote thing. I actually led a pretty robust research study at NYU on the relationship between diabetes and air pollution, an issue that my family has a history of diabetes. So that was something I dove into really headfirst and just loved solving problems, plain and simple. And so I think that's probably the earliest roots of my entrepreneurial bug. But anyways, I graduated high school in 2014 and was really excited to go to Duke. Had no idea what the heck I wanted to do, but my friend Justin and I, in our senior year of high school, we started a small business called Students for Students. And this idea really came about when we had noticed a few friends and families hiring essay coaches to work on their son or daughter's application. Not the essay coaches that you might have seen in the news recently that have gotten in some legal issues, certainly not what we were doing. But really, we were trying to help first-time applicants to college understand the system. And we knew that we couldn't do it ourselves, but we noticed that if we could find a student or two who are at the schools that the high schools were applying to, then maybe we could help connect them. And maybe let's say someone wants to go to Duke, and who better to help them guide through the application process than a sophomore or junior who has recently applied to Duke, gotten in, and now has been there for a few years. And that was the very basic thinking. We called the business Students for Students, and that really took off. So that senior year of high school into my first year at Duke, we helped about 150 clients with their applications to school. And we simply served as the middleman, right? That marketplace to allow the high school students to connect with the college students. And I think that was the next iteration of my building something bug, if you will, right? First, it was maybe the science research, then it was this idea of working for myself, heck, making a little bit of money, and getting to meet a lot of cool people through the process. But then we got to school, and I was at Duke, my partner was at Wharton, and we still wanted to grow the business, but we didn't really have necessarily the best resources to do so. And we also were not in the most conducive environments to build a company. Everyone around us, they were competing for great jobs, amazing careers, but not that many were interested in entrepreneurship. So my partner, Justin, and I, we traveled to different events, conferences, meetups, and I wish that the summits like yours and mine were around, but we couldn't find them, right? And we started, honestly, from a selfish desire, wanting to connect with other people like ourselves and not necessarily the 40 or 50-year-old who was already succeeding in business. But if you can go back a few years, right, finding that person. And when we couldn't find it, we built it ourselves and called it NextGen. We hosted the first conference in the summer of 2015. And from an event perspective, probably like the worst event of all time. But the people who were there were absolutely phenomenal. And we put a real high bar on the quality of the individual we were accepting and seeking out and conducting our outreach to. And that, honestly, I'm so thankful was the case because that was the rock that everything that is today NextGen was built upon. And having those 300 attendees join us in Austin, Texas was really the start of something new. I don't think I would have been able to tell you that at the time, that I'd be working on this full time 5 years later. But I'm really blessed to say that's the case. So that's the Dylan in the early days in a nutshell for you.
When you were thinking about college, because a lot of people who are probably familiar with your work as well as NextGen might think, you know, obviously college was so important for you and now you're an entrepreneur. So how has college played a role in the creation of this company? I mean, would you go back and skip college to start this sooner or no?
I'd say that if I could go back, I would probably take a gap year and flesh out my own vision, my own passions a bit more. I think that college is an amazing opportunity to meet such incredibly diverse and talented individuals. I know that my experience at Duke has helped me become who I am today. Less so from an entrepreneur perspective, more so from an individual perspective. Right? The growth that I had to go through to balance school, sports, building a company, having a social life, right? All these things challenged me to be a better person. And I think about college not necessarily for what I learned in the classroom, but for what I gained from just being there on campus. So I actually did the opposite of what I guess the majority of entrepreneurs do in 2019. So instead of dropping out, I graduated the year early. And thus, that simply was the motivating factor, was that I couldn't do both, right? I couldn't be in school full time and also run a company full time. Back in 2017, when we hired our first team member, I knew that my abilities as a business leader were suffering because I was also trying to do well in school, right? And trying to juggle a million other things. And so graduating early was my solution. But of course, other people will take gap years again, maybe drop out, whatever it is. I think that college is an important growth opportunity. And that when we're so young at 18, 19 years old, it's important to expose ourselves to different ways of thinking, right? Different ideas, different ways of life, honestly. And that takes shape in culture, religion, et cetera. And just the exchange of ideas that happens in a college classroom is really second to none. So again, just to recap that, I'm not sure that my public policy degree and my economics degree will be the most influential items in my life, but certainly the relationships I developed and the learning process that going to school entailed will stay with me forever.
Because I would have thought that you would have gone for more of a business degree, but at the time when you were applying to colleges, were you thinking that you would start something like this or become an entrepreneur, or were you not even thinking about it?
Definitely not. I probably would have told you at the time that I wanted to be a brain surgeon. I was a big Grey's Anatomy fan as a kid. Yeah, definitely not at all aligned with what I'm doing today. But I grew up probably because of the science research with a passion for sciences. And I thought that I was going to study that at school when I applied and got in. And even after that first small business with Students for Students, I still thought that I would follow a more traditional path. And it wasn't until probably my sophomore year at school that turned on its head a bit. But I came in as an environmental sciences major, and that did not last more than one semester, I'll tell you that.
That's fascinating. So would you agree then that that entrepreneur journey starts at a different time for everyone?
Most certainly. And I'd say that you can't really know what you want to do until you have experiences. And Alexis, this is something that I believe we share the opinion. I remember listening to an episode, you were talking to someone who had done work in suicide prevention and depression prevention. And we were talking about that you can't know what you want to do in this world until you have many different experiences. And so for me, my experiences led to the idea of let's go work for yourself. Right? Let's go. You see a problem. Let's go solve that problem, right? And work on how we can be the best at building NextGen. For other people, that might be going to be that brain surgeon, right? Going down the more traditional path. But until you have a little sampling of everything, how the heck are we supposed to know at 18, 19, 20 what's meant for us?
Agreed. I love that you say that because so many people do not realize that it's completely normal to not know what you want to do. I mean, Dylan, obviously you're so young and you have this huge, fantastic, successful company, but a lot of times it doesn't always work like that. So I feel like it's very important for people to know that there are tons of entrepreneurs who don't become successful until much later on in life. I guess how much of it would you attribute to hard work and how much would you attribute to some luck?
I think there's definitely a mix of both, but the majority by far is the hard work aspect. For me and my own personal experience, I could not be where I am today without finding some of the mentors who have been absolutely instrumental in my success. And I'll say that if you are a young person listening out there who is dabbling with the idea of starting a business or doing something that might be, you know, quote unquote different or against the status quo, find the one person, the two people, the 10 people who have been there before in that industry, in that space, and go make them listen to you, right? In terms of get on the phone, right? And hustle and get that email out there, cold email, whatever you want to do. Gary V can tell you many more ways to go about actually getting the phone call. But for me, I know that if without my mentors who I found at a young age, I would not have been here. And then it's about executing, right? And I like to joke that with my team, we can strategize for days on end, right? Be in the boardroom, be in the conference room, talking, planning, have the best plan of all time. It means nothing if we don't actually go bring it to life. And that is where hard work is absolutely key. And it's a lot of those long nights. And that's why, especially as a college student, it's not easy when you are, let's say, going to class from 10 to 4 and you're starting your full-time job at 4:30 and working until 4:30 in the morning. It's not an easy life, but it's those sacrifices that we have to make. And hard work is the number one most important factor, I'd say. And also working smart, of course, right? You don't want to work without intention. So I'd say balancing those two is really important. And of course, you need a little bit of luck in there to bring it all together.
Agreed. Let's talk more about the mentor part, because I've spoken openly about the fact that I never really had a mentor. And I think that might have even come up during our Fordham talk. I'm like vaguely remembering, or somebody asked a question. But how did you find a mentor? And what are the key takeaways you had from the mentor or mentors that you had?
Yeah, definitely. And I'd say that to each individual, that experience will be very unique, right? And it might be one mentor, might be an older sister or a parent. For others, you'll need to talk to 30 or 40 before you find that one individual who really invests in you and your success. In my case, one of my first core mentors stumbled into my life very much so serendipitously. My freshman dorm at Duke, my first year dorm, right across the hall was one of my good friends, Carly, and her father, Lenny Stern, became one of my nearest and dearest mentors very quickly, given that we had shared passions and a lot of similar experiences. So in that case, heck, knock on your neighbor's door, right? See who's there, and you never know what relationship will be extremely instrumental in your own development. But for me, after meeting folks like Lenny and his world, the bug was really just taking off, right? And I knew that, heck, this is a knowledge pool of wealth that I can benefit from. And if I listen and I learn, and I'm open to hearing feedback, and whether you want to call that criticism or lessons, I don't think that really matters, but just opening yourself up and adding value always. So it wasn't necessarily going to someone like a Lenny Stern and saying, hey, I want your help, but it was maybe asking, what can I do for you, right? How can I add value to what you're building? And even if you don't have a business yet, you are still a young person who has an outlook on life that maybe that older adult doesn't have and doesn't have experience to or exposure to. And so you can be a resource to them. One of my favorite stories about mentors comes from a good friend, Nick Mayers. He's the co-founder of Kettle and Fire, a bone broth company. And before he even had an idea for his business, for his food and beverage company, he was a big fan of a podcaster. And he would listen to this podcaster every single day. And whenever a new show would come out, he'd have it downloaded and ready to go. And he respected him so much, but he sent him email after email, never heard back. But he really wanted to get this individual's attention. And so he started transcribing the podcasts for that individual. And when he had about three or four ready, he emailed them over and said, hey, I'm Nick. You might have read a few of my emails before. Haven't heard back from you. I just wanted to send you these podcasts that I transcribed for you. Hopefully this helps. Would love to chat soon. All the best, Nick. And he got an email reply maybe in 5 or 10 minutes. And that person is still a massive mentor to him to this day, right? So Nick found a way where he could be of help to that individual who was very much so way above him in the world of business, right? But Nick wanted to connect. He knew that it was valuable and he put the time in and made it happen. And so I think for anybody who is trying to reach a mentor, maybe not a Mark Cuban or a Gary Vaynerchuk, but maybe there's someone who's a little bit more accessible, find ways where you can help them. And if you can, then the relationship will be beautiful and very much so seamless from the beginning.
I love what you say, and I agree. Do you think that every person, young or old, who wants to become an entrepreneur needs a mentor? Is that crucial in success or no?
At certain points, yes. At certain points, no. I think that inevitably, mentor or no mentor, if you don't have the other qualities that it takes to be a successful entrepreneur, like hard work, determination, grit, hunger, it won't necessarily matter. So I'd say that build your product, right? Do what you are here to do. But when you realize that there could be a benefit from a mentor, honestly, some of the times the mentors benefit the most by anticipating road bumps for you, things that you don't even know you're going to run into. Other times it's way more clear. Let's say you're fundraising, right? Definitely would be helpful to talk to somebody who's been there before. But at a certain point, it's up to you to really determine when and where you put your head down and work versus you go out and seek help. But I'd say at a high level, mentors can definitely open up doors for you that it might take you, you know, maybe you could get there without a mentor, right? It might take you 12 months with a mentor's help. Maybe you're there in 3 or 4. So at different times and points, it becomes more or less important, but I'd recommend it to everybody to find that person who can be your guiding light.
If we back up a little bit now and we talk back to when we were saying about college. So you started this when you were in college and you hosted your first one, you said, in Austin, Texas.
Yes, exactly.
For students who are in college and want to start and become an entrepreneur, because I feel like you even said it like that word hungry right now. Everyone hears the Gary V's and everyone all the time talking about that hunger and hustling and all the time. But 99% of people will not necessarily become entrepreneurs. A lot of companies in this day and age fail. So if you're in college and you are struggling to have that idea, or you feel like you're not motivated to take and put hard work into your classes because you're so adamant about having that idea, I mean, Dylan, how do you navigate explaining this to young people? Because I bet at these summits and these huge conferences you have, that's probably an ongoing question.
Yeah, definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head, Alexa, that for the majority of folks who approach or interact with the world of entrepreneurship, they likely will not end up building a business, building a brand, whatever that means to you, right? They will probably at some point in life try it, but they might not stick with it, right? As you just mentioned, companies fail a lot. Individuals realize it might not be the lifestyle for them, and they choose a different path. And that is completely fine. What I would say to a young person, I would encourage them to get out there and try. Maybe that doesn't take shape in building your own business, but maybe it's interning at the seed stage startup that, you know, Uncle Jerry told you about at the last family dinner, right? Whatever it is, I would say to try to get as many aspects on your plate, right? And your experiences, your resume, honestly, it's building out what you realize works for you. And so also I'll note that being an entrepreneur does not have to be building a business. There in today's world, I consider a lot of the creators and that type of individual to be more or less an entrepreneur, right? You can work for a large company, a Capital One, a GoDaddy, a Walmart, and there are opportunities to exhibit entrepreneurial characteristics and qualities in such environments, right? So it's more of a mindset to me, honestly, at the end of the day. Now, again, some people push back on that as it's not the typical definition of entrepreneurship. And I think it's just maybe a semantics issue at that point. But if you think entrepreneurially and you're always looking to problem solve and to add value, then whatever you do in life, that'll work out, right? That'll benefit you, regardless of if you're building the next Facebook or you have a quote unquote corporate job.
I love that you say that. And I love that you said those two things now about those traits that entrepreneurs have, because I don't know if you agree, but I found in this rise of social media that a lot of people think that, you know, that influencer term or just sitting at home getting paid so much money to post on Instagram once a day, that they're kind of entrepreneurs. And I feel like sometimes that term has gotten maybe picked apart in a way that's not really the ideal term of an entrepreneur. I mean, I truly think that an entrepreneur is somebody who's out there actively looking to solve and change things in the world that need to be changed. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I think you hit on the two buckets there. I break up into entrepreneurs and creators. And entrepreneurs tend to be more of the business-focused problem solvers. And I love the definition you just gave about who are finding areas in the world where they can improve it and make it a better, whatever that means, right? Versus creators who could be on the influencer side. I think, as you mentioned, Alexa, in today's age, when we hear about individuals getting paid $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for an Instagram post, it's definitely just natural to hear that news and get a little angry, a little bitter, right? When we figure out that, oh my goodness, this person posted a photo and they just got paid 20K, whereas it takes me 2 months of backbreaking work to get that 20K. That's definitely, it can be unsettling, right? And I don't want that at all to paint entrepreneurship as a whole in a bad light. But I do think it's a subsect, right? And we live in a world where if you have a niche talent, a niche ability, even if that is your 300,000 Instagram followers, you can leverage that into financial and influential success, right? And that's the whole world of influencers and affiliate marketing, et cetera. We could talk about that another day. But I definitely think that for the true entrepreneur, that's probably not the same motivator. It's a little bit of a different factor there versus the influencer can be in addition to you building your brand, you building your business.
Yeah, that makes sense. So for those of you who are listening and are freaking out thinking that we're like anti-influencer, I mean, there's obviously different levels of it. You could consider me an influencer, and I'm obviously an entrepreneur because my main goal is that was not the goal and still is not the goal. And I think, you know, if you are a true entrepreneur, you create and continue to create different ideas versus content. But I think that definition can kind of just be thrown all over the place. But tell me about NextGen. So tell us all about NextGen, because if you guys go on the NextGen website, it's so awesome. And I bet it's evolved so much from the beginning. And I mean, I just had this summit, which is, I wouldn't even compare it to what you're doing because it's completely different. And that was kind of, I wouldn't even say it was not in any capacity a failure, but there's so many things I would do differently. But you know, when you first had this idea and you put on the first summit, what did you walk away with after that day?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the kind notes there. And I completely agree with your last note on the influencer differentiation. You know, look, that just to close that point out, I think an Elon Musk is certainly an influencer too, right? Would he consider himself an influencer? Probably not. He'd call himself an entrepreneur. But because of his business success, he has built up influence. And that's just a natural component of you building your brand, right, Alexa? You're going to have hundreds and thousands of people listening to you, learning from you. That's influence. And so it's exciting, but you'll leverage that accordingly, right? Moving on into NextGen, I certainly appreciate your kind notes there. I definitely will say that our year one, you probably knocked us out of the park. When we had our first event, the vision was, as I mentioned earlier, simply put, to bring together some really amazing and talented young people who were living life on their own terms, right? And a little bit different than the average individual who was 20 to 30 years old, let's say. What we couldn't have predicted is that this would launch from an event into a larger community network and even to a certain level of movement. Right now, we work with about 3,100 startups, and we have about 10,000 folks in the NextGen universe. And our goal is to add value to make that entrepreneurial journey just 1% easier. Right, moving from that first event, we had about 300 entrepreneurs and 300 individuals. And what we learned was that this peer network, this peer group doesn't exist outside of NextGen for a lot of these folks. And while we thought they were coming to us to learn from incredible speakers, maybe the reality was that they were coming to meet each other, right? They were coming to find a co-founder, to talk about hiring practices, to maybe even find friends who could understand what they were going through and why a bad day as a young entrepreneur is different than a bad day as a student, or a good day is different than a good day as a student, right? And so we've learned over the years, and I'll say this, that our number one piece of feedback that we've received is to just listen to your audience, listen to your customers. And in this case, those are the entrepreneurs, right? And I'd say for anybody, whether you're building an app or a product, you learn from asking the people who you're serving. And that's what we did, right? So following that first event, we listened and we said, what do you want next? And the number one answer was, we want another event. So we committed to hosting a second conference. We moved to New York City for the 2016 event, and we had about 400, 500 people. And that event was a little better, right? Especially from a business side, from an event production side, maybe like a tad hair better, but either way we were growing, right? In between the two events, we really committed to finding the amazing folks who were out there. And we knew they were out there, whether in school, maybe they dropped out or skipped college altogether, and around the world, of course. But it was about establishing where we could go to look for these individuals. And so we learned a lot, I'd say, through just initial outreach. And again, this is only my partner, Justin, and myself at the beginning, with the help of some incredible volunteers. But it was honestly a full-time job that we were figuring out as we went. And I think after that 2016 event, that's when we realized that this was more than just a conference. And we had this Facebook group that we had started after the first event. Really was designed for folks to find roommates for the conference if they were traveling into Austin and then to New York. Maybe they could find somebody and save up and thus make the trip more affordable. But that group just really took off. And everyone who had come to our events, they would go home from the conference and add their co-founder, add their peer, their favorite entrepreneur, whoever it was. And all of a sudden, Justin and I had this very robust Facebook community on our hands that we had no idea what to do with. And we would take turns moderating the group. So we would basically every other day, one of us would go in and comment on all the posts and really just network with our members and help them find each other or who they were looking for. And that was our full-time job for about 2 years. And then after our 2017 conference, we brought on our first full-time team member. And that was a really exciting step for us. And I think that was also, that coincided with both of us committing to the long-term nature of NextGen. I was a rising junior in school. Justin had taken a gap year, so he was a rising sophomore. It's a very pivotal time. When you think about what happens in your third year of university, most people are recruiting for the big banks, the consulting firms. And I really said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to focus on this. I believe there's a path forward next gen. I know we're helping people and changing lives to a certain extent, and I want to see this through. And that was a really pivotal moment for us. And that's when we built out a lot of the infrastructure that we're still figuring out how to get right today, but we're definitely playing with and getting closer every single moment. Things like our chapter program, right? Our online community, working with our brand partners to find resources that can add tangible value to businesses, helping folks save money, right? Whether that's investment opportunities, you name it, right? Putting it together, a really robust mentor network. That is all more or less in the past year and a half to 2 years, as we do strive to be the go-to home for the early stage entrepreneur. And again, the event has grown itself as well. We'll have 1,000 attendees for Next Gen Summit 2019, June 7th weekend in New York. And this will be our fifth NGS, which is crazy to say. And again, I'll just reiterate it for probably the ninth time. We never planned any of this, right? We knew that we were doing something cool by bringing together these young folks, young entrepreneurs who are doing something different. And it's really morphed and shifted a million times over, but really blessed to call this my full-time job.
That's the best part about entrepreneurship, and where I think that concept of success comes in is because as something slowly starts to grow, you'd probably agree that if you go into something having these huge expectations, I would think it would be less likely to be successful. But it seems like NextGen is obviously geared towards entrepreneurs and young entrepreneurs, but I feel like it's also equally geared towards young people and college students as well as people of all ages. I mean, it seems like you guys are hitting a huge demographic here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head that we look to promote such diversity, whether it is in a minority founder or an underrepresented founder. But it also can take shape in meaning diversity in different gender and age and school, not school, right? And so we do try to put together an all-encompassing community because we know how much that adds value to every other individual, right? If you're coming in and you are that 18-year-old who maybe it was the core vision when we started Next Gen, right? To get that 18-year-old who is building a company, let them know that there are other folks out there to support them. But also, it's important to get that 35-year-old who has already achieved a certain level of success, who can add so much value to that young 18-year-old who maybe that 35-year-old sees her or himself living in, right? And so it's finding that balance between, we know our core demographic, right? We know that we add the most value to that first-time entrepreneur at an early stage, but we also need to have the folks who are a few pegs up, if you will, who can really be the shining stars of the community and be an example for our young members to follow.
You have such huge people on your speakers board, from the CEO of Girl Scouts to the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine to the founder of Priceline. How do you even go about getting these people involved? From the beginning, I assume, if you were kind of pitching these people, unless it was a personal connection, it had to have been a little bit harder to land those bigger people at the beginning.
Definitely. And I appreciate the kind words there. We've worked so hard to attract a really high caliber of individual to join us at the summit. And what we honestly pitch to them is Next Gen Summit, speaking on our stages, it presents a unique opportunity to speak to the business leaders of tomorrow. And if you are, let's say, Jesse Itzler, who will be speaking at our 2019 event, a massive name, owner of the Hawks, successful author, right? He's absolutely crushing the business world. But Jesse, if you think back 20, 30 years ago when you were getting started, imagine what it would have been like if you could hear from someone like yourself, right? And that's our pitch. Imagine going back to when you were getting started, what you would want to know. And now I'm going to give you the opportunity to speak to hundreds and maybe even 1,000 of these folks. That's a pretty unique opportunity. And of course, we're not the only event out there that has young attendees. We're not the only avenue to connect with them, right? YouTube, et cetera. There are a million different ways to do so. But there's something special about having a like-minded group together in person where they can take that amazing talk on stage and then spend the next 30 minutes breaking it down together, right? Attendee to attendee, small group learning sessions, different opportunities, and really focusing on a little bit of the heartstrings for these speakers, but even more so on the idea that they're helping to educate and prepare tomorrow's version of themselves.
How do you come up with that full day-to-day or that schedule for the day? Because you have such a specific kind of type of person that speaks, which is, you're right, most very successful entrepreneurs, but almost all of them are people who have really started from the bottom. So you don't have, it seems like, any Instagrammers or influencers here, which I really like, because I think it keeps it very specific with what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, definitely. What we look to do within 1,000 attendee event is try to, as much as possible, personalize that experience. And by that, I mean that we give opportunities to customize what you choose on a programming level. So at any given time, we'll have two different speaker sessions going on, but we'll also have one-on-one mentoring. We have a 5-to-1 attendee to mentor ratio. And these are folks who are maybe previous speakers or folks in groups like YPO or EO, but a really high caliber entrepreneur who are giving us hours of their time on the weekend to come and meet our attendees. And before the event, we have a short, basically a questionnaire that goes out to all of our attendees that says something along the lines of, where do you need help? Right? What areas are you looking for help in? Things like sales, marketing, being an author, right? You name it, we probably have a category that's close to it. And then we, as NextGen, the team, will match each attendee with, at the very least, 3 meetings, one-on-one 20-minute sessions with these industry-leading executives and experts to serve as mentors. And so whether maybe the programming that's going on from speaker level is not the most applicable to you, that's fine. Maybe you have your mentor session then, or maybe you're partaking in a roundtable discussion with one of our partners or with one of our speakers, breaking down these high-level ideas. And so the goal of all this is to create an all-encompassing experience, honestly, for our attendees to come to NextGen Summit with a few areas they know they want to focus in, of course, in the world of entrepreneurship, and then build those pillars up while having this more general experience with a bunch of like-minded folks who will challenge you to be your best. So it's not an easy task. It's definitely a heavy lift on our end, but it's what our attendees have come to expect and why we are still here 5 years later, 4 years later, goodness, because we have put that high bar and continue to raise it every single year.
You have this one in New York, which is, I believe, June 7th to 9th. Is that it?
Yes, exactly.
And it's 3 days. I mean, I put on that summit for one day, and after it, I was like, that was the most work I've ever put into something in that period of time. So how many people help you on this now? I mean, is it still just you two? You say you officially hired somebody else as well. But yeah. I can't imagine, it's especially with this caliber of speakers, that it's just you guys.
So we have a full-time team in NextGen of 5 right now, which we are still very lean, and 5 should be 50 for the work that it seems.
Oh,
sometimes.
Oh yeah, 500.
I would love that. If we can find those 450, send them to me, I'm in. But we also do have a very robust volunteer program, and these are leaders in the community who want to take a higher level, right? Want to play a more pivotal role in putting the event on. Things like speaker engagement, right? Maybe it's closing and opening sessions. Maybe it's the registration table. My favorite aspect of our NextGen events is that to date, Justin, his parents, and my parents, they've been at every single one. And they man our registration table. They help us out whenever we need their help. And so it's really a family affair in that sense. And so we'll have anywhere from 50 to 100 volunteers during the weekend who are doing anything and everything. But they are the true reason that this is even able to function, right? Maybe we get everybody to show up, but then they'd get there and we would be running around doing a million things like chickens with their heads cut off, and it just wouldn't work. So we are so fortunate to have the support of really incredible people who make all this possible.
And when it comes to the speakers, the sponsors, are they the same sponsors every year, or do you rotate them?
Yeah, it's definitely very different based on the year and who we are talking to. We have, of course, some partners that have come back, and that's our favorite. We can have somebody that we can grow with. But for the most part, when we talk to these companies, they want to engage with tomorrow's business leaders, right? And so at NextGen, this unique opportunity is presented to win with these folks when they're 25, 26, building their first business. Some of our large partners for this year will be Dell, Target, some other incredible companies that can add real value, right? And so, for example, when you're in NextGen, we're going to offer a significant discount on all Dell products, right, an easy level to make entrepreneurship easier. So maybe you're hiring more team members and buying technology for them. maybe we can save you a few dollars. That can go right back in your bank account, and thus you can afford two bowls of ramen noodles that night when you're living on mom and dad's couch as opposed to one, right? So working with these companies that our entrepreneurs want to be engaging with, two other great examples, Gust, which is a company that helps with incorporation, Brex, which is a corporate credit card for startups. Our job and our team's job is to find the right partners that can actually add value. Amazon Web Services, right? Companies in NextGen get a great amount of free credits just for being in NextGen. So working with these large brands that want to also get in front of our community, but that it makes sense for our community to engage with. That's the balance we strike.
I love that. And I want to clarify, because I'm not sure, because I unfortunately haven't been to one of your summits yet, but hopefully we'll be at the one in June. You say that there's an opportunity for that one-on-one mentor. So for people who are listening and want to go to the next summit, if you're applying on the site, is this you can have a mentor with one of the huge speakers, or are they just the headlining speakers and then the mentorship is maybe with somebody on their team? I mean, how does that work?
Great question, and would definitely love to have everybody who's listening head to our site and fill out a quick application so we can get to learn more about you. But for the one-on-one mentoring, we bring in about 200 folks who are not even speakers, right? Those are 200 industry leaders who come from, as I mentioned, about 15 different categories, from sales, marketing, technology, authorship, you name it. But what we also have is our speakers will engage with our attendees on a more intimate level as well. And that's something that also separates us from other events that are out there. You'll hear from an amazing individual, but they won't get off stage and disappear, right? They'll come and have a roundtable discussion. So even if they're not doing one-on-one mentoring, there are opportunities to continue the conversation and make it more accessible. One of my favorite stories of NextGen Summit, in 2017, we had Brandon Steiner as a speaker, who will actually be back this year, which we're very excited for. Brandon started Steiner Sports, which is one of the largest sports marketing and the number one sports memorabilia company in the US. So Brandon gave an amazing keynote. And he gets off stage and he's hanging around to shake a few hands and meet a few folks. He's there for 2.5 hours, standing straight, nothing to lean on, meeting and shaking hands, going down. There was a line around the corner to get 5 minutes of his time. And he stayed and he met every single person who wanted to chat with him, gave his business card, set up meetings, you name it. That was the access we were able to provide at NextGen. And I would go make sure our session was operating well, come back out. There was still a massive line. For 2.5 hours. And it just blew my mind and shows a lot about, one, the individuals who are coming, but two, what they're willing to give in terms of their own time, their own opportunities to these young folks who they believe so much so should be supported and getting these resources.
Wow, that's incredible. And I'm obviously not surprised because he's such a big name. Initially, and even now sometimes, even though you guys were, you know, already successful now, it's so concerning for an entrepreneur at the beginning of their journey or sometimes even halfway through. Obviously, what you've created is a little bit different than if you were to have like a shoe company or whatever. But are you ever nervous like people won't show up or there's not going to be the same level of interest? I mean, obviously, at the beginning, I assume that was probably a concern. And I mean, how do you advise people who are scared about putting their ideas out there because they're nervous maybe what the response might be?
I'd say for anybody who has those fears and doubts, I tell them it's natural, right? In our own experience, we always are like that. Now on year five, we still have those same doubts that keep us up at night, right? Are people going to come? Are the speakers going to be great? Is that speaker going to drop out? Right? All these different fears could actually keep us up nonstop, right? And we could worry. But at a certain point, we know that we prepared, right? We know we put the work in and the hours in to make this the best event possible. And sure, things will go wrong. But if we anticipate them as much as possible, and we've worked super hard to get to this point, then it'll be okay, right? And so anybody, whether you are building that shoe company, that app, the more traditional startup, if you will, planning is great. But as I mentioned earlier today, you got to execute at some point and not worry about what happens when you do so. And if you fail, that's fine, right? Get the feedback, learn from it, and go try it again. If you fail a second time, do it again. And maybe after the third time, ask yourself, okay, am I in the right business? Is this the right space, the right timing, et cetera, et cetera. You can't let the fear of failure get in the way of your inevitable success. And that's so important for young people to know, especially if you are coming to entrepreneurship without much experience and thus without much confidence in your ability to execute. You have to learn on the job. And that's the life we've chosen as young entrepreneurs, right? We don't have another alternative. We are putting ourselves with our backs against the wall, perform or fail. And either way, you're going to learn, right? It's all about learning at this age. No one needs to be looking to make their $1 billion at 22, 23. If you can prepare for the next big win or the next opportunity, then you're in a good spot, right? And so maybe at 24, 25, when the real opportunity strikes, you're that much more prepared.
Agreed. And when you say that word failure, I mean, if you had put on 5 summits initially and nobody, maybe 100 people consistently showed up to all of them, would you have thought of that as failure or no?
I'd say it depends, but to those 100 people, I'd ask them, did we fail? And if they say they had the best experience, that they feel motivated, that their journeys are changed, then it wasn't a failure at all, right? And Tim Ferriss talks about this concept of true fans, and I'm forgetting who he jumps off that from, but really his point is that if you can find 1,000 true fans, which just seems like a massive number when you're getting started, but think about that at scale, right? Only 1,000 true fans who believe in what you're doing and are going to support your every move, then you can build any business in the world. Even if you're Apple or you're Next Gen, if you can get those 1,000 true fans, anything's possible. And so we're not talking about 1 million. We're not talking about 10 million users that you have to find. But if you get those 1,000 true fans who you are making an impact in their lives, you are adding value to them every single thing you do, then they're going to be your best marketing channels, right? And so if we had 5 years of amazing summits with 100 entrepreneurs each, they're going to go out and tell their friends. And so maybe that year 6, every single one of those 100 comes back, but they also bring a friend, right? They bring a third friend. And next thing you know, quote unquote, overnight, we hit it big, right? And everyone knows there's no such thing as an overnight success. It's just how it appears, right? And so I think that for anyone who is not getting the traction that they want initially, reframe your thinking, right? And ask yourself, what am I comparing my version of success to? Am I looking at the cover of Forbes, or am I looking at my own metrics that I set with my team? And if I'm hitting those, who cares if I'm not the biggest entrepreneur in the world, right? That's not important at all. The fame, that all comes with tried and true success. And that means a small win here and there, a small goal that you set and you accomplish, and then you raise the bar a little bit more and do it even better the next time.
I think with that, everything you're saying is so true and is so important, because that trial and error is such a crucial part of the entrepreneurship journey. And in my opinion, and if you're so easily willing to potentially give up or get that frustrated, then it might not be the journey that's for you. And that's okay too. But right. I want to ask you, touch a little bit on the topic of investing, because I've never had an investor. For what I'm doing in my company, that's not crucial. But definitely for the summit, when it comes to sponsors and all of that stuff, there's kind of sometimes that just interest in having that larger investor or bigger person to support these dreams. So has NextGen been invested in? Is that something you guys have actively seeked out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say that for different businesses, different individuals, promote bootstrapping, promote going the VC route, but you have to talk about what's right for you individually. And so we as a company, we knew that we were onto something, and larger than just the summit, larger than just maybe an online forum page, we wanted to build that. We wanted to bring that to life. And so very recently, in the past year, we set out to put together a small seed round that would allow us to bring on the right people with the right usages of technology and different aspects of the digital world to see our vision come to life. And we never wanted to get to a point where we'd look back and say, if only we had the resources, we could have done this and that differently. That was something we didn't want to have any regret about. And so we put together a small fundraise, which was led by an amazing venture firm, 1517 Fund, based in San Francisco, that was started by initial folks behind the Thiel Fellowship way back in the day. And that has really opened up a world of possibilities for us. And now we can sit here today and plan knowing that we have the resources to see that vision come to life. Now, of course, I don't want to sound like we have an unlimited bank account hanging out over here. That's certainly not the case. But we still have that lean startup mentality. We'll never lose that. I think if you do lose that, you're in trouble pretty quickly. But the benefit of having an investor is that you don't have to necessarily worry about tomorrow, but you plan for 1 month down the line, 2 months down the line, and can take these more calculated risks, right? And you're not going to know that if I fail with that risk, my business is out, right? And I have to fire my team. I have to go get a new job myself. But you have a little bit of a safety net, and not too much. So I'd say that for entrepreneurs, and we're always listening, we're always putting a pulse on these folks, think about your own best case scenario, right? And does having a bank account that allows you to take risks, does that help you? Or does that hurt you? Because there is a certain feeling of content, that comes with some of these stories you hear about failed investment routes that could be really negative. And I don't want ever to sound like I'm promoting one way or the other way, but I'm really just thinking, and this is where, again, mentors can come in, talking to folks who have done both, right, who have bootstrapped, who have taken on outside capital, and seeing where you fall on that spectrum. I don't know that we want to raise again. I think that where we are today, we're in a healthy spot that we're excited by, and thus we'll see what the future holds. But it was a great learning opportunity to hone in on where NextGen is headed and where we add the most value.
The biggest issue with young entrepreneurs is that most everyone doesn't have funding, unless you're just very lucky, you know, you weren't born into that funding. So how do you overcome that as a young entrepreneur? I bet you get asked all the time, and I get asked all the time, you know, I have this idea, but I don't have the money to execute it, or I have a very small amount of money and I've run out. So now what do I do?
Definitely. And it's a large problem that honestly is not the most equal when it comes to something like a playing field, right? And that's why at NextGen, we commit to a certain amount of our proceeds as a company going to the NextGen Foundation, which is part of our overall mission to support those who might be under socioeconomically disadvantaged, right, and can't afford to pursue their entrepreneurial dreams on their own. And so we want to make that happen as much as possible with grants and scholarships, either to attend NextGen Summit, our conference, or to pursue their dream on their own terms. We want to make that happen. But for the larger world who might not have access to something like a NextGen, I'd say that it does impact you, what you can do today, but it doesn't have to be a detriment to your long-term vision. There are a lot of ways that we can make money right now. And I think, again, we brought up his name a few times. Gary V has a lot of great content about going from the quote unquote crap that's in your attic to $100, right? And making that $100 then into $1,000. And it's not about turning a business idea into $1 billion overnight. There's smaller steps. And I think that something that gets overlooked constantly are pitch competitions, grants, right? Maybe if you go to university, there's an opportunity to win a cash prize just on your campus through some type of startup competition. If we've exhausted all those routes and then you still need funds and you need resources, then maybe it's time to talk to investors. But if you haven't even begun to open that can of worms, then dive in, right? Find that online competition. Find that grant that your local government's giving out to community or social impact-oriented businesses. I guarantee you that everyone out there, for the most part, can find some level to hold on to. And then from there, if you get one domino to fall, the second's easier, right? And the third's even easier because you have that little resource win. So definitely it's not easy, but that's why places like NextGen exist, right? We want to make that journey 1% easier, even if that means connecting you to opportunities that don't really require you to have significant capital, but you can start building today.
Agreed. And I, when I think of the investment and the money thing, I love that you say all those ideas. I love, love, love it, because I bet 90%, 99% of people listening are, perhaps some of you guys are honestly just too lazy or not super invested in your idea to explore those other opportunities, because the whole concept of it, an investor, it sounds so great and it sounds so amazing. You know, somebody's going to give you free money, but it doesn't work like that. And especially Dylan, you can probably attest to that since you have one, that, you know, when you have an investor, there's so much more that comes behind that. It's not like you just get X amount of money in your bank account every month, unless, you know, you have some type of angel investor. So looking into those right. Other grants and opportunities, I mean, are huge. You mentioned the Thiel Fellowship, but were you given that or no?
No. So my partner and I, we stayed in school. We didn't take the fellowship. Not that we could have. I don't want to act like we had it in our grasp anyways. But we decided not to pursue the Thiel Fellowship, given that one of the main requirements is you drop out of school to build your vision. And for me, that was never something I wanted to consider. I knew that I wanted to graduate and have that full experience. So while not a fit for me, some of my best friends and most successful folks I know in the entrepreneurial world did accept that fellowship. And you know, Nick Mayers, who I mentioned earlier, he was a Thiel Fellow, I believe, 2017, and it worked out quite well for him. So teach their own, but we decided that was not a path we wanted to look at.
Yeah, but even that, you know, for those of you who are listening, and even if you're not necessarily looking to drop out of college, if you are looking to drop out of college and heavily pursue your idea, then that's another great thing to do. I mean, it's quite hard to get it, but it's a huge, huge investment for your life, you know, if you are looking to, you know, have that entrepreneurial mindset and company. So Dylan, you know, any last words? You've said so much good stuff. And I think you were such a fantastic guest for the podcast, but I mean, any last words for anyone who's listening?
Well, thank you again so much, Alexa, for having me today. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to share my story and have a great conversation. I'd say first and foremost, anybody out there who has found something they enjoyed about what I've said, come join our summit, right? We'd love to have you there June 7th to 9th in New York City. You can find us online at ngsummit.com. And there's a quick application. We'll learn a bit about you so that way we can make your experience the most optimal it can be. But secondly, on a more general note, if you are one of those folks who is teetering on the edge of building a business or following your passion, whatever that may be, whether it is to be a brain surgeon or to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, give yourself some credit because you're working hard. And a lot of times in today's world, that's overlooked because you don't have the magazine feature. You don't have the amazing press story behind you. You're not getting featured on Alexa Curtis's podcast, which I'm so thankful to be on.
Oh my God, stop making me blush.
But you're still working hard and you deserve some pat on the back. And if I'm the first or the 100th or the 1,000th to tell you that, I hope it's not the last time. And I really appreciate it by tuning in today and giving me a chance to share my spiel.
That's amazing. Well, where can everyone find you on social media as well as NextGen?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, I'm there. Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, Gambardella, G-A-M-B-A-R-D-E-L-L-A. Now, the one catch there is Twitter doesn't let me have my full name as my username. So my handle is just D-Y-L Gambardella. So shorten there. But elsewhere, Dylan Gambardella, you can find us. NextGen, we are almost actually on every platform at NEXT_GEN_Summit, SUMMIT, excuse me. So find us on social, follow us, share our wisdom, give us more of your wisdom, and we look forward to connecting with you further.
And can everyone still apply if they wanted to buy tickets to the summit this year?
Oh yeah, 100%. We've got some spots still available, and we would love to have some of the listeners out here join us in person in New York.
Well, you're amazing, and what you guys have created is so phenomenal, and I can't wait to see where this ends in like 10 years. That was a question that I completely forgot to ask, which is what I ask everyone. What is your end goal? I mean, where would you like to see yourself as well as NextGen in 10 years?
That's a great question. So in 10 years, I hope that, first and foremost, I hope that the individual who is teetering on the edge of launching that business, I want them to commit. I want them to build that idea and commit to making it a reality. And the second, and where we fit in, as soon as they make that mental decision to go in for it, I want the first thing to do to be to join NextGen. Come to an event, join our online community, our online membership, and start interacting with our world, our business hub. And hopefully we are known by everyone out there in the world of startups that you're building a company. Great. Have you joined NextGen yet? I want that to be a question you hear, not only in Silicon Valley, but in India, in China, in Europe, in New York, you name it. And we got a long way to go to get there, but we're certainly on the path.
You are totally on the path, and you've said so many things during this episode that are such fantastic takeaways for everyone who's listening. So Dylan, thank you so, so much for taking the time. I'm so glad we met at Fordham, and everyone check out NextGen. Make sure that you connect with him on LinkedIn or even social media, because I bet he would be happy to answer any of your guys' questions. So that's it for episode 71. And make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered at TILUpodcast.com if you want to submit, as well as at This Is Life Podcast on social media. And on a separate note, we just put up a website for my Disney show. So if you go to fearlesseveryday.org, you can separately submit, because I've been getting a lot of requests about how to submit and what we're looking for that show. So thank you for your support. Dylan, thank you so much for being on this. And I hope you guys have an awesome rest of your week, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Thanks, Alexa.